Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for November the 5th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening, everybody. It's kind of good to be back. I was away a week, and then we were off 1 week. David and I were traveling around working on our documentary. You're going to hear more about that later tonight. We're going to have a fast hour of information and news of interest to veterans. We're going to hear from six veterans who share their experiences, including the challenges they faced in returning to life, civilian life, after their military life. After that, we have news from Washington. It will be a fascinating show, so stay tuned. First, though, I'd like to acknowledge two sponsors of our show, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, whose financial contribution helps us provide this weekly show for the benefit of veterans and their families across the country. I also wish to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And again, I want to remind everybody that this is the Veterans News Hour. So veterans, if you have something you'd like to share with us about the VA, maybe something you're dealing with the VA or something with your family as it affects your personal life and during your service, you know, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love for you to share with other veterans. Again, that toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Over to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Well, tonight, courtesy of the VA's Make the Connection program, we will hear from six veterans who share their experiences for the benefit of other veterans. Our loyal listeners will know that we've had interviews before from the Make the Connection program, and I think each of these interviews, which are pre-recorded, provide some fascinating insights about what it's like to serve in the military, but also, more importantly, to make that sometimes tough transition from military service to civilian life, and how each of these veterans overcame their problems, overcame disabilities, often from combat, to make a kind of a successful transition back to civilian life. So first we're going to hear from two veterans, Linda and Steve, and you're going to hear primarily from Linda what it took for her, who was both an Army and an Air Force veteran, to talk about the post-traumatic stress that she suffered from her service during the war. And opening up to talk about it with her husband, Steve, who himself was a Navy veteran. And they'll share their insights about post-traumatic stress, the ways the treatment improved Linda's life and their marriage, and really how all veterans can tap into some great recovery resources. So with that, without further ado, Doug, if you'll please roll the first tape for us.
Linda, Steve, take two.
My name is Linda. I served in both the Army and the Air Force for 20 years. I served all overseas, but I did deploy to Iraq in 2006 as a combat nurse.
I'm Steve. I was a Navy corpsman, but went on to become a teacher for the Department of Defense School Systems.
We met, Steve had just gotten out of the Navy and was being a ski bum up at Lassen, and I was going to college and skiing on the weekends, and he hooted at me.
Good-looking blonde, what could I say?
And we ended up getting married after that and started a family. When I looked at the injuries that I saw in Iraq, people losing both of their legs or arms, their life. You know, I felt I was always a strong person. I didn't think that someone who wasn't physically injured could have problems. But the sleeping problems turned into nightmares and a little bit of isolation. I think the people who haven't taken a weapon in their arm and shot someone, that sometimes we feel what we did there wouldn't relate to PTSD.
Her mother noticed it right off the bat when she returned. She mentioned to me that she's different, she's changed. It's not the same, I don't know, the smile's different, you know?
It was hard, you know? He knew I didn't want to do a lot of things like I used to do, but as I got better, we shared a big part of my therapy, which was making a video, wanting to show my therapist what PTSD felt like in my head. And him helping me really helped share my story with him. And I think that was the beginning of him seeing how I felt with the PTSD.
What I tried to do was always to be there, but there's still times where I just would feel angry that things were going on. And I came from the background where you don't really talk about things. And so as a result, I don't deal with things as well as she does. So even this long after it happened, it still affects me more than I would think.
Willow really helped me. Willow brought joy and the moment every single day. A dog is not judgmental. They don't care what you look like. They don't care what kind of day you have. They're just always happy. And if you can kind of focus on that and see that every day, it really helps. But, you know, it's a continual process of getting better, of adjusting and finding other ways to experience life.
You know, at a certain time, she said, I feel like I'm feeling life more. And it seemed that she started living in the moment, being there. And I believe that there was a growth in that.
You know, I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner now, and I work for the VA. What you find is people have maybe gone through therapy, but they're still kind of stuck. And I always, when I sit down with them and they're being admitted, I usually say there's like about three things we really got to focus on. One is therapy. You have to process that trauma. Two, there might be medications involved. They help with the symptoms. And three, an area that I don't think we focus on enough is finding a purpose in your life again. For me, it was going back, getting my psychiatric nurse practitioner, becoming someone that can help.
I think as long as the mission continues, then she continues to improve and heal.
I want to see people live their life to the fullest and have given so much of their life to this country that I want them to have a good life. I want them to be happy.
I'd like to thank Linda and Steve for sharing their experiences, and especially Linda for her service. Linda had been on our show on a previous broadcast where she had shared more of the details about what life was like as a combat nurse over in Iraq, and how she was coping at the time, really by just working even harder, and but then everything kind of hitting an edge for her when she came back home trying to make that adjustment. So we thank her for her insights too. As she said, she now works for the VA helping other veterans in the healthcare field and psychiatric field. And I think the point she made about veterans needing to find a new mission in their life, you know, obviously they need to get care and treatment, therapy, different forms for works for different people. But the point she made about veterans finding kind of a new mission, I think will really strike home, because people that serve in the military are used to, you know, having a mission, being part of a team, and sometimes when they get home, they've certainly lost the team that they were a part of, but they've also may feel like they've lost a purpose in life, and that will help not only themselves, but they can turn that into something productive by helping other people. So what do you think, Rick?
A couple of things, David. Yeah, I was thinking about the idea that she's found a new mission. I remember you while ago, you used to tell me about veterans and you know, when you're in the service, you know, you have a, you know, you're goal-oriented. You wake up and you have stuff you have to do, and off you go, and you go and do it. And then when you get out of the service and you kind of lose that, you have to get it back again. So that's terrific that, you know, Linda found that and shared that aspect of her recovery. A couple of other things. She was talking about how she didn't feel worthy because her issues were psychological and not physical. And, you know, David, you and I run into that quite a bit when we're talking to veterans, especially veterans with minor disabilities related to their service. I personally don't think anything's a minor one, but in their mind, it's a minor one because they're not as severely injured as maybe their fellow soldiers who they saw lose an arm or get shot, have surgery. But these are all battle wounds, whether it's a physical one where you lose your leg or psychological one where you lose your mind. They're, you know, just as harmful to one's health and well-being. So you never take it lightly. Veterans, if you're listening, no matter what your disability is, do not take it lightly. You're entitled to be compensated because that's what the law says, and that's what the policy is. The other thing is, in Linda's and Steve's situation, you know, they brought out how this is a family issue. And we talk about that. We've talked about that in many of our shows, how someone suffering from PTSD, yes, you know, they're suffering, but the family suffers. And the family goes right along with it, with the veteran who is dealing with trauma associated with the service. So Linda and Steve's story was perfect in the sense that it touched on all these little points that we have touched on in the past. And we need to continue to touch on them because, you know, they continue to happen all the time to our servicemen. So unless you have anything else, David, I'm ready to introduce the next segment.
Yeah, great. Go for it, Rick.
And we're going to hear from a veteran who ended up in prison after his military service, but with help, he is now doing well. When Ray left the Army, he couldn't adapt to civilian life. He tried to cope by drinking. After a downward spiral, he ended up in prison. He connected with Veterans Treatment Court, and his court-ordered mental health treatment saved his life. Now he gives back to the veteran community. Doug, please roll tape number 2.
My name is Ray. I served in the United States Army. I served as an infantry soldier from 1998 to 2001. It was a good experience for me. The brotherhood, the camaraderie amongst us infantrymen was unlike any other that I've ever experienced in my life. Getting out of the military was very difficult for me. I didn't know how to adapt to the civilian life. I felt lost in the world. I felt very lost. The brotherhood that I was a part of, I was no longer around my battle buddies. I was no longer doing something around other people that thought the same way that I do. And I chose to drink as a way to deal with life. I was drinking every day, and I was a fully functional alcoholic for a better part of a decade. Once I became a one-man party is when I knew I was in trouble. Once I started pushing everyone away from me, anytime I was out of work, or even including work, my entire life revolved around me consuming alcohol. Because of the alcohol, it was a downward spiral. Marriage, I went through a divorce. I lost my children, you know, I lost my home to foreclosure. I gave up my career with the federal government. I gave up on life. You know, there were times in my life where I actually contemplated suicide. I ended up homeless, out on the streets, in and out of jail. I woke up in a jail cell. I was in for felonies, endangering the public, aggravated assault on police officers, so I had really gotten into trouble there. I did a little bit of time, and I was introduced to Veterans Court. Veterans Court is a program for us veterans. You know, they help us with programs. They court order us to mental health treatment. They order us to get the help that we need. They said I needed the help. Let me go talk to somebody. Let me go see what kind of help I need. And so I did it. Going to mental health treatment, meeting with a mental health provider, I was given referrals for a transitional work experience program. It's through the compensated work therapy program at the VA. It's work therapy. You're working, whether you're working the food service, laundry, housekeeping, you know, you're doing different duties throughout the hospital there just to kind of get you around other veterans and people and trying to get you back to the world of working again. Being around other veterans, you know, trying to overcome barriers and struggles was good for me. I was in other group sessions with veterans that had similar situations as myself. We could definitely relate to one another. We just sit there, we talk about what's going on with our lives and try to help each other, try to motivate each other to make positive life changes. I learned to set healthy boundaries in my life. I learned of different ways to cope with reality than having to self-medicate. Today, I practice a lot of self-care. I do things that make me feel good in the heart. Instead of numbing the pain of reality, I do things that make my heart feel good. Because of these programs, the VA sent me to school to be a certified peer support specialist. And it's helped me become a better person. You know, now I get to help others. Others that are going through some of the struggles that I've been through. I've been down some very dark, lonely roads. And if I can inspire one person to make certain changes in his or her life, then I've done my part.
I think that's great. And thank Ray so much for taking the time to share his experiences with the VA, Make the Connection program, and in turn through our program here tonight. I think he is an inspiration. He has accomplished what he wants, which is to inspire veterans. If there is help out there, they need to turn to it, hopefully do so before they find themselves in as much trouble as Ray did, find themselves in a jail cell. But there are a lot of services out there for the VA. The VA gets a lot of knocks, a lot of criticism, but it has a lot of good programs. So there's vet centers, there are a lot of veteran groups, peer support groups. So just ask for help. That's the first step. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, no, Ray clearly picked himself up by his bootstraps and is moving on with his life. You know, a number of the things he was talking about, clearly he's immersed himself into the AA program with the idea of helping others, which is a big proponent of the AA program. Setting boundaries for yourself is so important. I can share that experience with him. I know in my own personal life, before I ended up putting myself in AA, boundaries was a big issue. And so anyone out there who's drinking and is an alcoholic and abusing alcohol, one of the things that they totally eliminate in their lives are boundaries. And Ray realized that, saw that, and got it back. You know, it's an example of somebody who has pivoted in his life and now is doing something good. So he utilized all the services that were available to him and turned his life around. What more can you say?
Yeah.
That's excellent.
That's great.
David,
and thanks again.
Why don't you introduce the next story?
Yep. Thanks, Rick. Next, we're going to hear from an Army veteran named Pauline. When she was in the Army, she sustained a very severe hearing loss. It caused her to become anxious, depressed, low self-esteem after surviving two abusive relationships. She finally sought help from the VA. She found that counseling helped her learn how to stand up for herself, and she's doing a lot better now. So, Doug, if you please roll tape 3.
My name is Pauline. I served in the United States Army from 1983 to 1986. For 3 years as a radio teletype communicator, I sent and received messages from commander to commander for the Pershing unit. We used two very, very loud generators for our AC power. And after 3 years of working with those generators, sometimes I had protection, sometimes I didn't. They gave me an exit exam, and the doctor checked me from head to toe. And then he asked me, how's your hearing? And I said, fine, why? He says, all your hearing scores are off. I thought, okay, good to know. And my hearing, I noticed it didn't affect me till about a year or two later, and then it got worse and worse and worse and worse. I just started feeling anxiety and depressed because when I started communicating with other people and missed the conversation, I felt dumb, kind of stupid, and I need help. I was an isolated person. I didn't know who I was. I was accepting a lot of things, negative people. I actually had a first marriage and divorce was in domestic violence. And then the second marriage ended up being in domestic violence as well, so I just felt I wasn't good enough. And maybe I was accepting the men that would try to control me in my life. So I went to the VA mental health services and I got counseling. The psychologists and the therapists that I seen, there were several of them, really helped me look inside of who Pauline was and what it is I wanted in life. I'm allowed to cry, I'm allowed to just express every need and want and desire that I have, that Pauline has inside, and share with her my goals that I want to attain. And it's just, it really helps. There's a big change in me. I now advocate for my own rights. I'm an advocate for myself, for disabilities and domestic violence. I ended up going to college and later ended up getting my master's degree in mental health counseling. My psychologist, she said, well, Polly, what is it you want to do? Who do you identify with? I said, people with a hearing loss. And I said, well, that's when I told her, maybe I'll focus on the deaf and hard of hearing. So that's when I went in the deaf community and started learning sign language. There are a lot of resources available, counseling, support groups, and resources for those that have hearing loss, mental health issues, and that have gone through domestic violence. There's people out there that will listen to you, support you, and give you a better understanding of who you are and how to communicate with other people. Therapists help me become stronger, a happier person.
And thanks so much to Pauline for sharing her story, and it really opened a lot of eyes to the experiences that she had in the military. That sometimes people take for granted. You know, they may work around very loud noises in a civilian job, but have hearing protection, and they may assume that in the military it's the same thing. And Pauline mentioned that in the job where she worked, there was an extremely loud generator that she worked around for years. Sometimes had hearing protection, sometimes not. But Richard, you and I have both represented veterans, and hearing loss is a surprisingly common disability for service members. what was probably one of the strangest stories that I heard was representing a Marine infantryman who had served in Vietnam. A rather new, inexperienced VA employee had actually asked him whether or not he had, had worn hearing protection in combat, and he just couldn't believe it because it clearly wasn't the situation where you would. And so a lot of people take for granted their hearing, and I thank Pauline for sharing her experience, and I think it's remarkable how she has she completely turned her life around, and now she's helping people both as a mental health counselor, but also those with hearing losses. I think that's so important. There are so many veterans affected by that. So, Rick, move along here. Why don't you introduce our next guest?
Let me just back up for 1 second on Pauline. One of the things that struck me about her situation is that she found it in her situation. She's dealing with a very specific issue of hearing loss, and how that affected her and impacted her life. And we don't really hear a lot about that. You know, we hear about some of the more traumatic events, but hers was more of a subtle thing, ongoing for so long and how it impacted her life. So that was kind of nice to hear a different story in that regard. And the other thing, I just want to say this to veterans who are listening out there, and if you have a hearing issue, you know, you can go to the VA and get compensated for it, and I urge you to do so. And I'm going to tell you a quick little story. I had a veteran in my office one time, and we were going through a list of his disabilities. And I said, well, how's your hearing? He said, oh, it's fine. I said, well, take out the hearing aid. Now, how's your hearing? You couldn't hear me. And so I said, okay, who gave you the hearing aids? Oh, the VA did. And they said, I don't have a hearing problem. I said, well, they gave you hearing aids because you do have a hearing problem. Well, we filed a hearing loss compensation claim for him, and he got his 20%. Anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. Our next guest is Joshua, who had a hard time transitioning from the Marines after serving in Vietnam. He bottled up his feelings and tried to cope by using drugs and alcohol. After falling asleep at the wheel and crashing his car, Joshua reached out to VA for support. Now he has the tools he needs to lead a healthier life. Doug, please roll tape number 4.
My name is Joshua. I served the United States Marine Corps from May of 1967 to July of 1969. I was in Hawaii, and then my battalion was deployed to go to Vietnam. Right after the Tet Offensive, we were the closest battalion to replace the casualties. We lost 26 guys and 41 wounded in a few days, from Good Friday to Easter Sunday. And I witnessed a lot of death and carnage, and my buddies getting wounded. About a month after we had that major battle, I was wounded in a landmine explosion that killed my buddy next to me. That took a toll on me, wondering why I didn't die in the blast. Why did I survive? You know, why did my buddy get killed? And did I step on the landmine accidentally and injure, kill him and injure myself? The military is a community that's, you know, well-run, and you have this camaraderie, and then when you come out to civilian life, it's not there anymore, and adjusting becomes a problem. I was suffering inside and shaking, sweating at night, just trying to find an answer, you know, to feel comfortable with what my buddies and I went through. I don't think they knew what PTSD was at that time, so I kind of self-medicated myself with marijuana, with cocaine, with drinking. My wife then, you know, was seeing that I was struggling emotionally. I mean, you gotta stop drinking, you gotta stop taking the drugs. And for some reason, my daughter crying reminded me of those crying kids, you know, when we do search and destroy missions. It brought me back to that. And so I was having a tough time with that. After 4 years of marriage, I left the marriage. I dated girls here and there, but I didn't have a really good relationship. You say, why are you so shut down? You're always shutting down. You don't share with me. And I thought, everything's great. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. Everything was always great. But I was dying inside. Self-medicating put me in a better mood. The cocaine, the amphetamines, you know, put me in a happier mood, you know. But it was short-lived. And I fell asleep at the wheel, and I crashed into a utility pole. And I said, oh, my God, I could have killed somebody. It's 8:30. Kids are playing in the street. And I said, that's it. You know, no more. I can't do this anymore. I went to the VA down on 23rd Street and 1st Avenue, Manhattan, and I was assigned a psychiatrist. She really helped me through a lot of the issues that I was facing. I grew so much from allowing myself to just vent. I'm able to tell someone, I said, I'm feeling lousy today, and this is why I'm lousy. And for some reason, by being able to be honest and relate to that, it just dissipates. It just goes away. I'm dating a gal now, working on a fourth year, and it's probably the first person that I've ever really connected with where I can tell anything to. Find, you know, what's available out there. Everyone's different. Everyone's different. Reach out and find a counselor, a good counselor, a good group. Try everything, because something will click with you.
That was very good. I want to thank Joshua You know, David, I've mentioned this phrase before on the program, but Joshua really illustrated it. You know, in the program, we say addiction is short-term pleasure and long-term pain, and recovery is short-term short-term pain and long-term pleasure. And clearly, Joshua was illustrating that by, you know, the use of the drugs and how that was, how he was finding enjoyment in the drugs, and then sooner or later, it just turned into a very painful life, you know, losing his wife and his kids and everything else. He also, when he was talking about getting out of the service and the struggle to getting out of the service, you know, one of the things that we talk about on the program is the coaching into care program, which we're going to, you know, I'll be mentioning that before the show's over. And clearly that Joshua really brought that to the forefront of how that, if he had had coaching into care, how that may have helped him back when he got out of the service. So a lot of nice little points there from Joshua, and nice example of for other veterans who might be struggling or might be able to relate. How about you, David? What do you think?
No, that's exactly right. And I think your point about the coaching into care program is great, because, you know, we talk about that every week, the close of our show. And I think Joshua, as well as really the other veterans that we're hearing from tonight, and maybe some of the veterans out there listening, would find help through the coaching into care program. Not all veterans, you know, return to war having difficulty coping, but the ones that do, there's a lot of them, and there's help out there. So let's go to our fifth guest, Elliot, who served in the Marine Corps. He had a tough time, as many veterans do, transitioning back home, a lot of anger and anxiety. He got counseling at the local vet center. They gained tools and coping skills to improve his mental health. He then went back to school and earned a degree. So, Doug, let's hear on tape five, please.
My name is Elliot. I served in the Marine Corps from 2003 through 2007, and I served in Iraq. My transition into civilian life was really challenging. Before I went in, I was really calm. I was relaxed. I was the type of guy who was really level-headed. And when I came home, I wasn't the same. You know how some people, they say they have a short fuse? I almost had no fuse. If I got angry for any type of reason, I would immediately just chew somebody out as if I was a drill instructor in the Marine Corps. A lot of the relationships that I had, whether they were romantic, friends, family, were all deteriorating. Me and my older brother got into an argument, which ended up turning physical. My mom comes out from her bedroom hearing this commotion, and she freaks out, not knowing what to do, ends up calling the police. That was the point in my life where I realized I had a serious issue. They took me to the VA, and I was put on the 72-hour hold, and that's when I started getting the help that I needed. I went directly to a transitional housing facility. They had counselors, they had medication, they had resources for putting a resume together if you wanted to get back into the job force. And I felt like I was becoming a member of society again. I started college in 2010. When I was in classes, sometimes I would notice my anxiety levels would rise because of the other students in the room. Going out to, like, for instance, nightclubs, if I wanted to go out with friends, crowded restaurants would give me really high levels of anxiety. Even being in traffic on the freeway, living in Los Angeles, I felt like somebody might be following me. And so it started to really have a negative impact on my ability to succeed in school. I dropped out in 2013. I knew I had issues. I knew I had PTSD, but I didn't know why. I mean, I knew it was related to combat, but I didn't know why I was reacting to certain stimuli the way that I was. So I went to the vet center in Corona, and I started seeing a counselor there. She basically educated me about what was happening in my brain so that I was able to understand why I was having the reactions that I was having. So now I could take steps towards actually fixing each individual symptom and recovering from each individual symptom so that I could learn to manage them. If you're in traffic and you notice that your anxiety level is going up, You can do breathing exercises. You can roll the windows down and get some fresh air. She knew that I loved to sing, so she said, turn on a radio station that you love or play a song that you love. Sing your heart out. You know, use your ability to do music and sing as a form of therapy. And it started to really work for me. I enroll back in school. I find a major that I actually like. I was happier. I was able to focus again. My energy levels were a lot higher. I graduated with my associate's degree in behavioral science on the dean's list from that same college. Since then, I've been going to counseling. I've been doing the therapy that the Corona Vet Center counselor mentioned. My mom definitely has noticed that I'm a lot more kind to people. Now I'm a lot more patient, and I'm more positive now than I've ever been. Take advantage of every resource that's out there. Go to the vet centers, go to the VA, get counseling.
I think that's great advice, and thanks to Elliot. And when he talked about his experiences driving on the LA freeways and thinking that he was being followed and just the stress from that highway, I think about the area where I live near Tampa, Florida, and you know, there's a lot of military, a lot of veterans in this area. The country's been at war now since 2001. There's a lot of veterans live around here, and I've just noticed, and this is just anecdotally, I've not done some big research study, but it seems like you know, there's so many people with road rage out there on the roads in this area. I have to wonder, I really have wondered, you know, what percentage of those are veterans who, like Elliot, may have been in combat, you know, just weeks or months before, and they're dealing with untreated post-traumatic stress, anxiety, and all sorts of other things. We've had other guests on our show before that have talked about that, sharing their experiences, you know, when they were driving convoys through Iraq and having to dodge vehicles that they thought had enemy in it, having to dodge IEDs, improvised explosive devices, and other things. So you can get a better understanding about how that gets into their mind and affects them. But thanks to Elliot for sharing his experience. And Rick, why don't we go to our sixth and final guest tonight?
One fun thing on Elliot's that I want people to realize is, one of the things that struck me is Elliot has worked real hard to get where he is today. And I think, you know, people who have issues, whether it's alcoholism or drugs that are associated with their service and PTSD, and you have to work, you know, if you want the help, that, you know, the help's there, but you've got to work once you get into these programs. You don't just show up one day and expect, oh, I'm going to be okay, I'm going to be able to manage the moment. No. It's work every day and work for the rest of your life. And that's reality. But the alternative, there is no alternative, because you're going to end up with severe consequences if you don't take, like Elliot said, take advantage of the resources you have. So I applaud Elliot to illustrate just how he has been working at his recovery and able now to manage the moment. All right, David, why don't you give us the next one?
Okay, our last guest was a Green Beret who served and survived combat in Vietnam. He came home, had many of the problems that we've heard from other veterans, couldn't sleep, had nightmares, drinking too much. Unfortunately, it wasn't until decades later that he finally reached out to the VA for support. Individual therapy did help him. But I think we can learn some lessons from the fact that it took him decades before he actually got help. So, Doug, if you'll please roll the last tape.
My name is David. I served with the United States Army Special Forces from 67 to 69. My time in the Army was just a great challenge, I think. It was physically, emotionally, mentally, and especially going to Special Forces, where you needed all three of those qualities in order to advance. The things that affected me happened both while I was in service, particularly in Vietnam, because that's where the rubber really meets the road. You don't eat well. You don't sleep well. You know, it's always raining or it's always hot. The mosquitoes, the snakes, the leeches. And on top of that, you know, everybody you encounter wants to kill you. So you do that day after day after day after day. It's going to leave a mark. When you come out of that and you feel that something's wrong, well, it's up to you to fix it. You're not encouraged to go seek help, really. That transition period is very, very difficult. Even though you do it alone to a certain extent, I was fortunate that I had, you know, a lot of family and friends that were very supportive. There were the sort of classical symptoms, if you will, of PTS. You know, sleeplessness, nightmares, irritability sometimes. I didn't understand a lot of what I was going through. Just didn't understand it. And I was other-focused. I drank a lot when I first came back, and as I was working, there'd be times when I'd start drinking on a Friday night, and I'd quit drinking Sunday so that I could wake up on Monday and kind of go back to work. And that went on for quite a while until my new wife said, you know, something's got to change here, buddy. And so I you know, turned into myself. I subsequently got divorced. There were no, you know, great emotional attachments, if you will. And so I kept it pretty much bottled up inside, never talked about it, never expressed it. I finally reached out to the VA. Gosh, I'm trying to think how many years passed, decades passed. One of my sisters was very persistent. She was very helpful and urged me. She was very gentle, but I got the message. And that I better get out there. Otherwise, you can look forward to a not very happy life going forward. That struck me. And I went to the Phoenix Medical Center is where I went. And I was treated well. I got the treatment that I needed. They outlined some, you know, different methods and whatnot. And they said, you know, which one kind of appeals to you? And I said, sitting here talking to you feels good. That's okay. And they said, well, we'll just keep doing that. And I started to open up a little bit more, you know, and I was able to talk to, you know, friends and family a little bit more about it, which was very helpful. Don't let the enemy defeat you at home. Every veteran understands that. But you're not going to do that alone. You need somebody to walk you through it, help you through it. Whether it's a family or friend or a spiritual leader or a professor, no matter who it is, make that connection. That's hugely, hugely important.
I think that's wonderful advice, and thanks to David for sharing that with us. And he gives credit to the VA for helping him. And one thing I thought was pretty cool was he goes to the VA there at the Phoenix Medical Center, and they tell him about the different types of therapy, and they basically then ask him, you know, which one is he most interested in. And I think that's good, because what I've heard sometimes from veterans is they feel that there's too much of a push on pills, on medication. And I think it's important to realize there are a lot of other therapies out there. It's not one size fits all. One doesn't work for everybody, and it's a matter of finding what works, and then going with it, being persistent. But there's a lot of help out there, and I think David's experience and the experience of the other veterans we heard from tonight hopefully is a good inspiration to all our listeners out there, that if they're a veteran, or if they know a veteran, or they know someone that's not even a veteran but is going through similar things, to get the help. It's out there, and they'll be a lot happier, and everyone in their lives will be a lot happier. So thanks again to all those veterans. And, Rick, in the interest of time, because we're already well into our show, we've got 10 minutes left. I know we have some news, and you also want to talk more about our documentaries. So back over to you if you want to talk about the documentaries first, then we'll cover our news and then get to Coaching Into Care.
Well, with regard to the documentary, we things are moving pretty well. David and I were up in Boston, Providence, and then Washington, D.C., doing some filming at all three places. We had interviewed some extraordinary academics and some other people down there at the United States Institute of Peace. It's all good. You know, people out there, if you want to follow us, go to stopwar.today. Again, that's stopwar.today, and you can kind of follow our progress as we get ready to put together our first mini segment. So what do you think there, David?
Yeah, it's good. And, yeah, in addition to our website, stopwar.today, we're also on Facebook. You go to Facebook search engine and type in Stop War Today. There's a couple websites with that name, but look for the one that has the Dove of Peace and the hands. That's the symbol for this project. And you can keep track of what we're doing, but also it's hopefully a very useful resource. Our goal basically is to provide a series of documentaries. We've already started filming a series of documentaries that enlighten people about the costs of war. And our guests on the show tonight have kind of done part of that for us by talking about the human cost of war, but also, you know, the financial cost, the social cost, the full spectrum of the cost of war. But then also, we have to take it to the next step, because at some point people are going to say, yeah, we get it. War is bad, right? But what's the next step? What are the alternatives to war? Is war really necessary? And that's where this idea of peace building and we've been talking to people that make this focus of their lives, work and studies. So I think it was fascinating, the interviews we've had so far. We're certainly have many more to do. But the work of the U.S. Institute of Peace, their website is usip.org. I think many Americans, Rick, as you and I know, if we've found in our own informal surveys, very few Americans actually know about the U.S. Institute of Peace. It is a government-funded organization that's part think tank and part action organization, where they've got people on the ground in countries around the world, not enough countries, in my opinion, and their budget is pretty darn meager for what they're expected to do, certainly compared to the Defense Department. But anyway, so check out our website at stopwar.today. It's kind of a unique website. It's not .com or .org or .gov. It's stopwar.today. And then on Facebook as well, under Stop War Today. And check out what we're doing and get involved if you're interested in any way. We're about running out of time, so a quick couple things from the news, and then we'll go to the Coaching into Care program, Rick, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay. Last week, President Trump declared all of November 2018 the second annual National Veterans and Military Families Month. Everyone knows that Veterans Day falls in November, but the idea started last year was to declare all of November, the entire month, as the National Veterans and Military Families Month. So it's to honor and support not only veterans but military families, because military life really is a family effort for those with family, and it's tough. It can be really tough. So the VA is sponsoring a lot of events, more than 300 events across the country at VA hospitals, at their benefit offices, even memorial services at cemeteries around the country. So look for that if you're interested at the local VA facilities in your area. And that's a big part of it. Another big issue, Rick, I know you have some information on this, is the issue of veteran homelessness and how the numbers continue to decline. The recent report, just released last week, which was based on an estimate provided by the U.S. Housing and Urban Development Department, is that the numbers of homeless veterans is decreasing. Every year they try to get some sense of what the estimates are. Thousands of local communities around the country, they conduct what they call point-in-time estimates of the number of people that are homeless, whether they're in emergency shelters or transitional housing programs or unsheltered, just literally out on the streets. And this year's estimate finds that just under 38,000 veterans experienced homelessness in January of this year. That's when they did it, compared to 40,000 the year before. So that's a bit of an improvement. I know the Obama administration put a big emphasis on trying to reduce veteran homelessness, and that's continuing under the current administration. A lot of programs out there, some sponsored by the VA, some sponsored by organizations. private organizations that get some funding from the VA. We've had some of those on our show in the past. But there's a wide range of programs, and it's just a matter of reaching out. So if you know a veteran that's homeless, encourage them to contact the VA. They actually have a national call center for homeless veterans, believe it or not. And the phone number, if you want to grab your pen and paper, I'll give that to you. So National Call Center for Homeless Veterans is 1-877-424-3838. That's 1-877-424-3838, which spells out, the words it spells out is 877, the number 4, AID, A-I-D, and then VET, V-E-T. So National Call Center for Homeless Veterans is there. Turn to them if you know a veteran that could use some help. So we're about running out of time. It's been a fast hour. So, Rick, why don't you wrap it up with our
coaching and the care program that we were talking about earlier tonight. We heard six fabulous testimonies tonight about veterans who are doing better in life, and obviously maybe the coaching and the care program helped them along the way, helped them to get back into civilian life. Because the coaching and the care program does help veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching and the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, VA's Coaching and the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. And David, why don't you take us out?
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. I would like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to especially thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, and Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great job he does for us every week. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.